Coming up this week, Sally and I near the end of our review of the book Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds, who was gracious enough to send us a little bit of personal feedback. So you'll want to tune in and hear what he has to say about our little old podcast. Sally and I talk about a couple of picks from Google, and we have plenty of feedback. So all that and more coming up next. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast, as you're probably already aware. This is episode 283 for Tuesday, April 9th, 2013. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally. Good to be back with you.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be recording with you. I'm thinking you're looking a little tan this morning for some reason.
There's a difference. There's a big difference between tan and burn.
Uh-oh.
That's what I had. So, and it kind of sneaks up on you. I mean, I was out in New Mexico for a week with my wife, and this is the fourth time we've been out there. We just love northern New Mexico, Albuquerque and Santa Fe. And it was only in the 50s the first couple of days. They were there, high 50s, something like that. So you're out in the sun. And you're really not, it kind of creeps up on you. So after day one, I had recognized that, boy, I should probably be wearing a hat, especially since I don't have any hair. But I'll get over it. But we really enjoyed ourselves, took lots of great pictures, and the weather was absolutely beautiful. Mostly 70s the whole time we were there, except that first day. So had a good time, but I'm happy to be back as well. So
we're happy to have you back. And actually, I'm really happy to hear you and see you, because when you go on vacation, you do it right. You go incommunicado. I was kind of surprised, like no returned email whatsoever. I'm proud of you for that.
Only the emergency one. So
I
try and practice a little self-discipline. We had decent Wi-Fi and such, you know, so technology wasn't, I did bring my computer and did some stuff, but only on a must-have basis. So
that's the way to do it.
We pre-taped or pre-recorded or pre-streamed our last week's show, which had some very positive feedback, and I'm looking forward to this show because we are approaching the end of our review of the book Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. And speaking of Gar, we had some communication from the author himself, which
my
was kind of
friend.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Gar Reynolds, for writing to Martin and Sally. We were so excited to get your message. He wrote just a note to say hello from Japan and to say thank you for discussing one of my books, Presentation Zen. I really enjoy your podcast, not just the ones featuring Presentation Zen. You two have a nice chemistry and a thoughtful, warm delivery. I think you're right, of course, that communication and storytelling is a big part of spreading the good news in a meaningful way. Thanks again, and I wish you all the best, Gar.
Sweet. Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gar. Appreciate that. And we appreciate the comment as much as we appreciate what you've written. And as I've mentioned on the show many times, I use it as required reading for the class that I teach for Martin Luther College. And I know that all of the students that have used it have really appreciated it as well. It just goes in a very systematic way through almost every corner, not almost, probably every corner of the whole presentation dynamic. And we've talked about things like layout. We've talked about things like prep and planning, those kinds of things. But today in chapter 9, mm-hmm. This is maybe where the rubber hits the road, and that's entitled Connecting with an Audience. So you can do all the prep, have the greatest slides in the world, but if there's not that thing between you and the audience, if that communication isn't happening and it's two-way, then you've wasted your time, because all the stuff that you've done, all the hard work that's led up to this point in time of the delivery and the time where you're trying to communicate with that audience, will have been wasted if this doesn't happen.
Yeah, and you know, I think GART does a good example by communicating or liking it to the communication that goes on at a jazz concert. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's been a part of and played drums and in different settings in jazz since he was like 17 years old and kind of observed good concerts and bad concerts. And there can be great music in both contexts, but it's more about the relationship with the audience, the give and take, the connection that's made there that makes a big difference. And I can definitely agree. I can definitely look back at good or great presentations I've attended and think about how they've made me laugh or how they've made me think and connect it to something in my own life or whatever it may be. That connection is really paramount to a good presentation.
Yeah, in the life of the church, we hear one of those presentations every Sunday morning. That's the sermon. Right. So, I mean, we've all heard good sermons, we've all heard bad sermons and everything in between. And part of what makes the sermon good is not just the solid content, but the delivery and the connection, you know, with the audience, that you're speaking the same language, you're on the same wavelength. And I also viewed this from my own perspective, and I'm sure you did too, Sal, as you read the chapter, because you do a lot of presentations, as do I, that there are a couple things that need to be in place for this to happen. One is you obviously need the solid content. You need good stuff. And not only do you need good stuff, you need to know the stuff. So it may be even good, and you've done a lot of research and put together very meticulous slides, and you've got good handouts. But if you're not confident in what you're presenting, then it's not going to go well, because you're always thinking, you know, what's the next paragraph? What's the next thought? How do I connect these thoughts? How do I engage the audience when I'm not totally sure that I'm at one with the content? So that's probably job one. You know, really, and we talked about that in previous reviews of previous chapters. Know your content, and you need to spend some time, you know, obviously doing that.
Right. You know, that really hits home for me. I do a lot of training on technical systems, and I remember making a statement, if you can teach it to me, I can teach it to other people, because I got the teacher part down, but having that confidence and knowing the system is really the key to being able to convey the information in a meaningful way to those that are listening. Another parallel, just observing my husband, who was a second career SIM student, going through that whole training process to be a pastor. And, you know, there were times when the worldly or uneducated me would say, well, when are they going to teach you to write your, you know, do your presentation skills, basically. When do you focus on that? And it's not about that. It's about learning God's word in such a way that you know the content, you know God's word, and can confidently speak about it in whatever setting you're put into. And
absolutely.
That's just such a blessing to know it well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Next thing, one of the things that Gar brings out in this chapter is the whole concept of energy and passion, and that comes through, you know, whether you're teaching kids, adults, whatever, they're going to see or not see your commitment to the content and this communication process. So with all the things that are in this book and all the things that we've talked about, there's really no excuse to be dull. You've got great content that's worth sharing. You've practiced it. You know the content. You're presenting it in a way that has all the tools and elements necessary to have high impact. So no excuses for being dull. Bring that energy and passion. I don't know, Sally, how do you get kind of pumped up before a presentation?
Well, I think you've got to realize you have 20 minutes or you have an hour with this audience. You know, lift up your voice tone, you know, dress the part, whatever it is, make them excited by you being excited with what you're conveying.
Yeah, a couple of things come to my mind. One is I almost warm myself up by warming up the audience. So before the presentation starts, I'm not just sitting on my computer or looking through my material or prepping. I'm trying to engage or interact with the people that are there to build a relationship even before the formal presentation starts. So that's really I think, a good takeaway. I think that can happen in the classroom, not so easy in a sermon, perhaps, but in Bible class, certainly, there's the ability to do that. So I think that's a big thing.
almost like you get them on your side. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the home field advantage. If you have connected with people, they're ready. They're prepped for you.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then just let her rip. I mean, I think that comes out in Ingar's book too. You really have to be confident in your own abilities and skills. Don't be afraid of making the mistake. Don't be so structured that you can't kind of go off the script. Mm-hmm. Kind of enjoy yourself.
I actually have a secret weapon. I always make sure up front that they are keyed into my Southern twang a little bit. Sometimes I even play a clip of Mississippi Girl, the song, you know, so that they get it right up front and they're kind of listening for it and enjoying along the way, the fact that they get a little Southernness and in the presentation. So that's my edge or icebreaker.
Yep. You know what? This is kind of a negative, and this is what kind of turns me off to a lot of presentations, and it ties in kind of with connecting with the audience, is that if I'm sensing that somebody's just trying to get through the material in a period of time, so they've got 60 slides and 30 minutes, that's not going to go well. I'm not going to get much out of that presentation, and that instructor, that presenter is just going to try and really touch briefly on a bunch of stuff and not, you know, go deep in the important stuff. And we talked about that in earlier chapters too. So I've learned over time, and I still am guilty of this once in a while, is to try and cut way back on the slides, to try and allow for that give and take with the audience, to ask questions, to engage, to talk about some of the things that they want to talk about versus what I think they necessarily need to talk about, or, you know, kind of structure it based on my perception versus their perception. And that's a skill in of itself. And that goes back to that whole simplify, 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 keep it simple. And then you have room to kind of roam around a little bit. And then you're not trying to, you know, get through those 60 slides in 30 minutes, which is obviously impossible.
Playing the devil's advocate there, boy, it would be hard for a novice to attack a presentation that way, because it's almost like without a safety net. If
you're
I don't have a few extra slides at
what
the
happens
end,
if you know, if I done get done early.
Yeah, I always I kind of sit on things for a while and contemplate them when I have presentations to do, and then I do it and I don't have a clue how long it's going to take me to present it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what I got. This is the topic. And, you know, if it takes me half the time that I'm allotted, I'm in big trouble, but that's what I got. So, you know, I just go with it that direction. And like you said, not try to overdo it or overstuff it with extras.
The other thing you can do, if you're not quite sure how long it's going to take, make sure that you've got kind of your key points toward the beginning rather than kind of the big finish, you know, at the end. So, you know, have maybe that auxiliary material in the background, you know, toward the last five or six slides versus, you know, putting some of that fluffy stuff in the front and then kind of building to the crescendo, which you may never get to. Or if you do, it's kind of a rushed experience, which is not going to connect with your audience because they're looking at their watches at that point too, and they know that you're trying to get through this stuff.
Mm-hmm. An important point that Gar brings out is don't rely or read your notes. Don't read the screen or the presentation points that are on the screen. I think we've talked about all of that building up
your notes. These tools that we've got in PowerPoint, Keynote, make it real easy once you connect it to a projector to see right on your screen what you wanted to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep.
Good stuff. There's a whole bunch of other stuff in this chapter. We don't have time to go through each and every item, but obviously worth the read. And I think that if you get to the other end of your presentation and you're not feeling good about it, your audience probably hasn't felt good about it either. So you know when it's happening, when you're in the zone, and you can rate your performance. And I think over time, the more you do it, obviously, the more opportunities you have to get better. So, and he makes that point too.
And Martin, you just practiced what you preached. You wrapped up this chapter discussion, leaving them yearning for more, which is one of the last points in the chapter. You know, go check out the book yourself because there's lots more there. And when you do your presentations, don't give it all to them. Leave them expecting a little bit extra, or not overstuffed.
Whet their appetite, right? and you want them to be hungry enough to dig into maybe your handouts. Or what I always leave is a list of Digo links. So I give them a URL that they can check out other materials. So very good. And again, Gar, thanks for your feedback. And if you're listening, thanks for your book. Good stuff.
Definitely.
Sally, right, moving on to ministry resources.
Yeah, I understand you did a little book reading while you were on vacation.
A little. I wouldn't say I got through the whole thing, but we had been made aware of a new book called Who is Jesus, published by Jared Oldenburg and a couple of other people that we're familiar with. And it's an iPad, it's an iBook, and I can show it here. And it's actually very cool. They've done a really nice job with all the things that you can do with an iBook. So, for instance, obviously, you can do a lot with design and such. Those of you that are watching can kind of see what some things that have happened here. They've added, let's say, an interactive map. So you can open up the map and you can go to different levels of the map to see it filled in for different time periods. You can then close the map and go to the next page just by sliding over. Now we've got a series of images that we could click on or tap and run through those images. And they've got embedded video. So the concept of the book, at least how I would characterize the book, and maybe they wouldn't agree with this, but you take the Road to Emmaus video, which is meant to be kind of an introduction to Christianity, and you put that in an iBook form. And you answer all the questions that come up from maybe watching that Road to Emmaus video, which is an excellently done 30-minute video. And they put it in a book format and made it interactive. So if they ask and answer questions, they have instructional videos and maps and images, call outs, and then some review questions. So as you get done with a chapter, you can go into the review questions and see if you kind of captured what it was that they were trying to get across. So it really is what about Jesus kind of concept, and an excellently done book. It's not free. I forgot how much it was. $4.99, I want to say.
$5.99.
Mm-hmm. But just a nice presentation of the gospel, and in a very engaging format. So if you have an iPad or an iPad mini, check out in the iTunes store, Who is Jesus? So you have to go into the iBook store, and you should be able to find it right away. So
I downloaded the sample, and so they'll give you the first chapter for free. So if you just want to try it out, not spend the money yet, you can get a feel of what the book is like. I really enjoyed the text, the angle that it was written from, mm-hmm. and the supporting documents, and some just kind of pulling together some major works and things. The Bible verses are embedded there. It's a easy read, and pleasing to the eye. It's well done.
Yep, nice job, guys. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. Do we have news? No news in tech, although there was plenty of news, but we don't have time for news in tech. We want to get to our picks of the week. So, Sally, you've had a couple weeks to think on this one, so I'm sure it's good. What is it?
Oh, no pressure there. But in the last couple of weeks, what I've been thinking on here is ideas for moving technology forward in our Lutheran elementary school, mm-hmm. and in particular, looking at Chromebooks. And what I wanted to share was just some of the research that I've been doing related to Chromebooks. I found a whole lot of information out there. In particular, I found that Google offers live webinars every week on Wednesdays. I'm signed up for the one going on tomorrow, where you can get an overview of the Chromebook and the Chromebook management console and that kind of thing. And then in addition, they have a whole series of archive webinars. So basically you can go out on YouTube and watch past webinars that they've done. And there's a variety. There's some that are just kind of generic overview of the Chromebook. There's others that are specific case study kind of webinars with different school districts and things like that that are using Chromebooks. So if you're looking to learn more, I would say that's probably the best way to get started. Of course, WLC has a Google Education Summit coming up this summer. It runs mid-June. Let's see, June 16th through 21st. Three college credits, and you get a free Chromebook in the deal. So if you're interested in getting started with Chromebooks, seems like you need to invest the time at this time of year to get ready even for next school year. So in addition to these two links in the show notes, I'll also include a DIGO list that I put together with probably 20 or 30 links that I researched related to Chromebooks. Interestingly, you know, when we talked about Chromebooks probably a year and a half ago when Peter Iles got them up at Grace and Oshkosh initially, there was kind of a rental program, but now it's pretty much that you buy them, and you buy and you pay a $30 management console fee, basically. And so you have a Google Apps account, and they connect those Chromebooks to your Google Apps account, and you can manage them all on that account. And it looks like a promising thing. I'm not sure if our school will go with it next year, but we do want to do the homework and understand the process. And I think lots of schools are going this direction. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of resources out there. And I just wanted to share what I'd pulled together, particularly this ultimately this DIGO list with a whole bunch of articles and links and resources. So,
good stuff. Yep.
Yep.
Our school, Peace Lutheran, which is where I go to church and my wife works, just got their first shipment of Chromebooks. And they had started with netbooks and weren't overly happy with the smaller screens and keyboards and the extended boot up times and those kinds of things. So a couple of teachers from there, Marv Wittig and Shelley Karstens, attended WLC's event. I think it was last summer. Mm-hmm. Very impressed with it, you know, got a good Chromebook introduction and were kind of sold on it. So they got 20 just in, and they were on back order. So I would agree. I think they're very popular at this point. So they're really excited about putting these in place and getting these in the hands of the kids and using them. I'm a Chromebook advocate too. I think they, just from the simple fact that it seems to be the best approach for integrating content nicely into the classroom in a kind of a no interruption way. You open them up and you log in and you're there. So there's not a lot of hoops to jump through, and they're very reliable. And I mean, they change the way you teach, of course, a little bit. And so there's those considerations, but I'm really impressed with what Google is doing there.
Just a couple more notes. Speaking of Google, if you get in touch with them on their website, they'll call you right away. So I do have contact with a Google rep now who basically is the way that you get it all tied to your Google Apps account. You could go down to Best Buy and buy the computers even, but you have to have that management console link with that extra $30 fee. So you have to work through Google to make it work for your school. The other thing is just different considerations like file sharing. If the kids go to cloud-based file sharing, does that mean our whole school needs to? Or do the teachers who have Chromebooks in their classroom also need a regular computer for doing the traditional server-based file sharing, you know, internal file sharing and things. So some considerations there. Also printing, and now Google has an air-based print methodology that you can make use of. So some things that you just don't think of right away that you do need to consider in the process. So interesting path, interesting to learn more about it.
Okay. Very good. Good stuff. Thanks, Sally. Mm-hmm. My pick is also actually by Google, but just recently. It's called Nick. It used to be called Nick Software. Now it's called Nick Collection by Google. And this kind of occurred to me while I was on vacation, taking a lot of photos. I probably took 1,000, you know, photos of some sort or another. Most of them weren't keepers, but one thing that can turn a marginal photo into a good photo is this software. This used to be very expensive, and since Google has purchased them, I think it's now down to like $149, I want to say.
Somewhere yeah, that's in that what it neighborhood.
Says. Mm-hmm. Used to be, you know, way up there. There are a couple of system requirements. It'll work on Mac or PC, so no worries there. But you have to, it works in conjunction with other kind of photo editing software. So you either need Photoshop Elements, which is the cheaper version and probably within the price range of most of our listening audience, or a tool like Lightroom, which I've talked about in the past, which is what I use, which is by Adobe, or Aperture, which is by Apple. Those are kind of photo editing slash organization tools. So you need one of those products to be able to use these, what they call plugins. But well worth it. And they offer a number of products. And if I just jump into, let's see, there is a page. Okay. There's six products here. And I'm not going to go through all of these, but a couple of these I use all the time. And I can show an example of one of them. Color Effects Pro 4 is a way to apply very cool filters to photos that really do some nice enhancements. One of the things that if you take any kind of landscape photography or outdoor photography, you know that overexposure, underexposure, that sky is sometimes a real challenge. It doesn't look in your picture like it looked when you took it. So a tool like this has filters, polarizing filters or gradation filters that allow you to punch that up a little bit, increase the vibrance of the landscape. They can correct for skin tone if somebody gets washed out because they're overexposed or whatever. So these filters are very, professionals use them, but they're not out of reach for the amateur like myself either, that you can easily apply kind of a recipe or a filter that works really well. One of the other ones that I use quite a bit is called Silver Effects Pro 2, and that is an application that takes a color photo and makes it black and white. Now, that may sound, you know, counterintuitive. Why would you take a color photo and go black to black and white? But there are some very good reasons to do that for effects sometimes, that some photos just kind of get a little bit different flavor or sense if you go black and white. Let me see if I can pull up this screen for those of you watching at home. I'm going to have to pull this to the other screen here and then go back to our friend Google Hangouts. There's no easy way to go from screenshot to screenshot, is there, Sally?
No.
Got to go back to the...
No matter how prepared you are as a presenter, you have to deal with Google Hangouts rules. So.
That's right.
There you go.
So here's an example of Silver Effects Pro. So here's the photo. This is a photo I took last week. This was in Chimea, New Mexico, of a Catholic church out there, kind of an adobe structure, and a little funeral, or a little gravesite in front of it that's enclosed by some wrought iron and a little cross, which was a, you know, fine photo, you know, in and of itself, you know, not my best effort, but, you know, acceptable. I wouldn't throw this away. But when you apply the filter, they have a bunch of these black and white filters, you can add a patina or a sepia or, you know, any kind of different black and white treatments. It's just now on the right, you see what, you know, what the filter did, and it comes out as more of an Old West style antique photo, and just kind of gives it a little bit different flavor rather than just your traditional snapshot. So those are some of the things that you can do with this Nik collection, and it's just fun to play with them. And if you do any kind of photography for your church or school, there's all kinds of tools that will enable you to kind of enhance that just, you know, enough to make it, you know, usable for your website or for, you know, for putting in the church yearbook or school yearbook or pictorial directory, those kinds of things, and well worth the price of $149, especially if you use any of these tools that I mentioned before. So that's Nick Collection by Google now.
So this isn't a web-based tool. This is a software download.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
But PC and Mac. Okay.
Right. Yep. It's not a Web 2.0 tool. I would assume that Google's going to take this and maybe wrap some of the technology into their Google Photos or whatever they're calling it these days. They bought Picnic a while back, and now they bought this group. So I think they recognize that, hey, there's some interest in this photography thing, and they're going to, I think, bring some of these tools to look for. This is really one of the only tools that Google sells. Most of their other stuff is free, right? Mm. Google Apps, I mean, they charge for, but there's always a free version. So this is one of those standalone products that Google is not known for. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with it.
Oh, that makes me nervous for them. Sounds like the kiss of death of Google's known for it.
Yeah. But well, you get what you pay for sometimes too. So
got your copy. So that's good.
Good stuff.
All right.
Shall we move along to community feedback, Sally?
Yeah, with it being 2 weeks basically since we've recorded a show, there's a fair amount of feedback to share. Lots of good things. Starting, of course, with Pinterest.
Of course. That's, where else
the place to start. And a couple of really good infographics that were shared via Pinterest. First up, morphing into a 21st century teacher, 27 ways to be a better 21st century educator. And these are things like question things, facilitate things, photograph, have students photograph the world around them, create, have students create movie trailers for an introduction to the lesson. Involve, incorporate, document, relate, collaborate with teachers from outside your circles.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, if you're looking for some fresh ideas, maybe this infographic will inspire you. And if this wasn't good enough, there's another infographic shared
by
Pinterest.
Mia McMeekin.
Yeah.
That's special.
That is. All right. And the next infographic on Pinterest was the 36 rules of social media. And this actually came from the Edudemic website, although they say this isn't specifically education geared, but so many people are engaging in social media that this was a really good list they wanted to share. And this is, I think, good for us as we craft ministry communication plans, and we want to include social media in those plans too. Like, if you don't update it, don't have it out there. You know, delete it if you don't bother to update. People don't want to shop where they socialize. Let's see what else. Become BFFs with your Facebook reps. So if people like you on Facebook, you know, make them important in your communication plan. Don't try to be clever, just be clever. Always write back. So if someone writes to you, make sure you respond. I think these are all really good tips, and the list goes on, and it's put together in a clever way that's definitely Pinterest worthy. Kind of retro look infographic. Mm-hmm. So
it'll take you a while to work through that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Next, via Digo, we had a few links shared, including copy.com, which apparently is the new way to get cloud-based storage. Gail had a few things to say about it. She said, get more cloud storage space. You know you want it. This is like Dropbox and how you upload and store and share the docs and images. It also is the same about how a user can get more space if you invite others and things like that. But she thinks that sharing is a little bit easier to work with than with Dropbox. So check it out at copy.com.
Cool.
Then also via Digo, Jason Schmidt shared a link to a Wikimedia Commons page. And this is for a photographer named Ken Thomas. And that name kind of rang a bell with me. We've actually talked about Ken Thomas's website and some of the images that are available there in a past Wells Tech episode. But basically, he's a wonderful nature photographer. And he has just incredible images that he's donated to Wikimedia Commons. So when you click on these images, they're available for download, and they are in the public domain. So there's absolutely no permission or credit required to make use of these beautiful imagery images that Ken Thomas has shared. And if you don't find enough here, like I said, you can go over to kenthomas.us, and he has tons of images that he shared there, and they're copyright free as well. So just a wonderful artist to share his work in this way, and he has quite a bit for you to pick from. So
he calls himself Hillbilly at Large.
Like yeah. So just beautiful photography. Perhaps you can use it in the classroom setting with your kids that are doing science research reports or whatever it may be. And he has amazing scenery. So you could make backdrops and overlay Bible verses or whatever it is that you're looking for. Check out this collection of images.
Cool.
All right. Then a few links that we'll have in the show notes, nothing real spectacular to show video wise, but a couple of articles, how to get hesitant teachers to use technology, and SlideShare 26 time management hacks that I wish I'd known at age 20. So I always like those time management things, Martin, and think of you with the classes and things you teach. And I think you'll find some
good stuff,
some neat tricks there as well. Next up, we had email from Pastor Rob Gunther, and I always enjoy Pastor Gunther and the things he has to share. You guys may remember that we interviewed Pastor Gunther just within the last month or two about being a published author on Amazon and in the Kindle store and the software that he used to do that. And he came back to us with a little bit of an update. And apparently, there's another published author in the Gunther family. It's his 7-year-old son, Josiah. Yeah. And Josiah has written a children's book. I actually ordered a copy. It's called Cheese and Quackers. I really wanted to put my hands on, you know, what the published version was like. And it's awesome quality. Josiah and his dad collaborated. Pastor Gunther did the illustrations for his book.
Very cool.
And they uploaded it to Amazon, and it's for sale out there. 7-year-old has a published book. He has his own ISBN number. He has the real deal here with Cheese and Quackers. It's the story of a mouse named Cheese and a duck named Quackers and how they became friends. And what's neat about it is Pastor Gunther's brain, because he's always thinking ministry applications. And he said, wouldn't it be cool if some of our Wells schools published books that their students have written, and possibly even a fundraiser for the school? Because obviously, when you sell books on the Amazon store, you get a piece of the profit of that book. But this is, you know, on-demand printing. In the back of the book, it says, made in the USA, San Bernardino, California, 5th of April, 2013. So it's printed in there that this was printed for me personally and mailed to me just last week. And
that would be, I'm just, my wife teaches 8th grade language arts and English. Or and that would strike me as just kind of a neat year-long project where you're working at this over the course of the year, and at the end of the year, you get published. Wouldn't that be a really good feeling and a great exercise for that kind of application? So
yeah, cool. I definitely agree. I was really excited to read it. Took it over and showed our teachers here in Sleepy Eye yesterday, because I just was so thrilled with the quality. I mean, this is just like all the millions of children's books that we had as my boys were growing up from the library. It's great, slick print and very well done.
Cheese and Quackers. I like it.
Yeah. Congratulations Josiah. So I had the chance to participate in another Pound Wells Ed Twitter chat last Thursday night.
How did it go?
It went really well. There were only about 5 participants, I think, but from across the country. And Rachel Pearson is moderating these chats, and she had questions to get the discussion going, and just lots of feedback. It was kind of focused on special ed needs in Wells schools, and very interesting. And I was just really excited to be part of a Twitter chat. It was
cool.
Fun.
It was cool. I know I enjoyed the one I was in.
And they're planning to do another one on April 18th from 8 to 9 p.m. Central Time. So tune in.
You know what the topic is for that?
I think she announced a topic, but I'm sorry I don't. I didn't make note of it, but yeah.
Okay,
We'll follow that for sure. Just a quick mention from Tyler Shinnick, a question about our Christian Worship Lectionary Google Calendar. And I don't have it up on the screen, but for those of you that aren't familiar, we do have the lectionary series, all the readings, the suggested hymns and Psalm of the Day and that kind of thing. We have that for you in a Google Calendar, and we'll have a link in the show notes if you aren't making use of it. You can suck it right into your own Google Calendar and have that come up for you really easily. Tyler found a mistake, and we got that corrected, so thanks for letting us know.
We are not infallible, to be sure. We prove it each and every week.
That's right. You get the real deal here, the honest
That's right.
stuff.
We're every man and every woman here.
And finally, we heard from our friend Gail again, Gail Potratz from Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin. And this time with a voicemail message. You want to play that for us, Martin?
Yeah. And just a reminder to everybody, you can leave a voicemail too using our SpeakPipe plugin now that sits on our WordPress site on wellstech.wells.net. Just look over there on the right side of the screen, and you can do exactly what Gail has done here. So let's listen to Gail.
Hello, Martin, Sally, and Jason was on the show too, the classroom video show that I just listened to. I wanted to add another really fun resource, just really new. The address is www.peanutgalleryfilms.com. And what it is black and white silent movies, footage from those. And you can, with audio, put your voice into these movies. And the app actually translates, it's not an app. It's just a program that has to be used through the Chrome web browser, on any machine through the Chrome browser. And it will take your voice and make it into a text box underneath the picture on the silent movie. So you can have kids working on creating dialogue together and having it show up under these films, which I think could be kind of a neat thing to do in language arts, depending on what particular skill you're working on. You could highlight certain skills like descriptive adjectives or, and of course you use the correct punctuation. So I think it could be really, really fun and learning, lots of learning at the same time. So check it out, www.peanutgalleryfilms.com. Thanks. Good show.
And thank you, Gail. That looks like a really fun find. I think we'll have to put it on our list of wacky, wonderful websites at St. John's.
Yeah, lots of good language arts stuff this week. Maybe I'll have to encourage my wife to actually view this show. All right. Next week, Sally, what are we doing next week?
I'm looking forward to next week because we're going to kind of delve into the non-church, non-school ministry outreach websites. So there's other ways to share the good news besides on your church or school website. And some very creative people in Wells have options along those lines. And we're just going to kind of look at different things that you could be doing with websites. And in particular, we're going to talk to our friends from the website breadforbeggars.com. This is kind of a, I think, South Atlantic district effort, maybe, where they are sharing the good news on this website, Bread for Beggars. We're going to hear what that title actually means and talk to Pastor Mark Parsons and Matt Visaggio, who are down in Port Charlotte, Florida, and kind of the brains behind the site.
Very good. Sally, good to be back with you. And we would encourage our listeners to visit with us again next week. And in between time, just as Gail did and some of our other listeners, leave your comments, your feedback. We would love to share your thoughts and questions on the show. It doesn't have to be overly insightful, but if it's a question that you have, you know, that we haven't covered, or maybe we covered probably not as well as we could have, let us know, and we would love to get that on the show. So go to our website, wellstech.wells.net. Send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. Leave a voicemail. Pinterest is one of our favorite input tools, so We have all those links on our website to get to those social media venues. So let's close the show with one of our newer artists, Ben-Hur Kamrang, with his song, Brothers, Sisters, Let Us Gladly. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Brothers, sisters, let us gladly give to God all our best. Serve His hearty, thorough, honest, with a living love impressed. All our duty, all our striving, all our time to Him belong. Praise Him then with true devotion. Come before Him with a song. By His mercy, by His bounty, by the gift of Christ His Son, what great goodness He has shown us, what high marvels He has done. Let us to Him promptly, freely yield our bodies and our souls, thankful that His love protects us, that His wisdom all controls. Gracious Lord, accept our service for the sake of Christ your Son. Lo, our hope abides now only in the righteousness He won. Bless and save us, help and guide us, what's to comfort and restore, till in hand we rest rejoicing, praising you for. Lord, accept our service for the sake of Christ your Son. Lo, our hope abides now only in the righteousness He won. Bless and save us, help and guide us, what to comfort and restore, till in hand we rest rejoicing, praising you for.